With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
So we will organize business-to-business matchmaking meetings for companies, and those tend to be small and medium-sized companies that are looking to sell their products and build business pipelines in that market.
Undersecretary for Trade and Foreign Ag Affairs, Luke Lindberg.
But then we also have a segment of these trade missions where we bring our cooperators along who are working to develop that market and provide opportunities for our commodity players in new and innovative ways.
Again, talking about the formats used for USDA ag trade missions. Well, speaking of trade, USDA's latest grain inspections report is showing strong corn movement, continuing to drive U.S. export demand. Soybeans and wheat remain mixed week to week. Total inspections reached just over 3.12 million metric tons for the week ending April 9th. Corn inspections, roughly 70.2 million bushels, down from the previous week, but still well above last year. And marketing year-to-date corn movement, now just under 2 billion bushels, running significantly ahead of last year's pace. Sorghum inspections also showing strength, 8 million bushels, on strong export trends primarily to China. Bean inspections, 29.9 million bushels, slightly above the prior week. And wheat inspections, 11.8 million bushels, down week over week, but still ahead of last year's cumulative pace, 773 million bushels. Well, U.S. beef exports declined in February, but strong demand for variety meats helped support overall value per head. According to USDA, global demand remains uneven, with market access continuing to shape those trade flows. Total beef exports fell 13% year over year. Export value dropped 10%, much of that decline tied to continued limited access to China. And despite the weaker muscle cut exports, variety meats did stand out. Shipments increased 12% from a year ago. Value surged 40%. Demand outside China, though, remains supportive. Now, higher fuel prices beginning to push grain transportation costs upward. That's across rail, barge, and ocean shipping. It's adding another layer of expense for U.S. producers moving crops to market. Diesel prices jump sharply to $5.64 per gallon. That's up 24 cents on the week, more than $2 above last year. And it increases operating costs across all freight modes. Rail demand remains strong. Grain carloads up 4% week to week and well above historical averages. Barge movements down 23%, tightening available capacity even as year-over-year volumes remain higher. Ocean freight rates, they're also moving higher. Gulf to Japan shipping costs up 4% week over week. And for ag, the combination of higher fuel prices and firm transportation demand increasing the cost of moving grain. Well, strong cattle prices and tight herd supplies are encouraging producers to consider expansion, but rising costs making financing key part of that decision. Analysis from Ag America Lending highlights how livestock loans are helping producers grow while managing financial risk. According to the report, expanding a cattle operation requires significant upfront investment. That's purchasing animals, feed, veterinary care, infrastructure, and financing options can provide some of the working capital needed. It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
This is Agriculture Today.
Corn markets are likely to remain stable with the potential for higher prices over the year ahead.
Mark Rosenbaum is Senior Grain and Oilseed Analyst with Terrain.
The prospect of fewer acres than last year supports the expectation of a slight reduction in total U.S. supplies in the 26-27 marketing year. However, final acres, yields, and demand still face considerable uncertainty due to weather and the Iran conflict's effect on energy, fertilizer, and U.S. export demand. In the March 31st Prospective Plantings Report, the USDA estimates farmers intend to plant 95.3 million acres of corn, down 3.45 million from the latest 2025 figures, but 1.3 million higher than we had forecast in February. Much of the Western Corn Belt and Northern Plains states have estimates of 300,000 to 550,000 fewer corn acres. Following last year's surprise later season acreage revisions, the potential for revisions is significant this year as well for at least four reasons. First, normal statistical uncertainty. Over the past 20 years, the 90% confidence interval for the prospective plantings estimate relative to final acreage is 4.2%. That equates to a range of 4 million acres this year, or between 93.3 million and 97.3 million acres. Final corn area at either end of this range could have a significant impact on prices. Second, low survey response rate. This year's survey had the lowest response rate ever at 36.7%, down from 44.3% last year. This means that the USDA is left to infer what more farmers intend to plant from a smaller sample and may mean the interval discussed previously is even wider. Third, potential reductions. There has been considerable discussion about whether the Iran conflict's influence on fuel, fertilizer, and possibly other input costs will impact planting. The majority of the prospective planting report survey responses this year came after the conflict started, and about 41% of them were during or after the second week of the conflict, after the initial fuel and fertilizer effects were reflected in market prices. While some of these responses may have captured early switching, decisions made after the survey was completed could shift more acres. Fourth, weather. While the USDA estimates farmers intend to plant about 95.3 million acres, spring weather will have the last say in what is achievable. Although a few of these factors are present every year, the ongoing Iran conflict and the response rate decline are unique to 2026 and could mean another year of surprises in the June acres report or in later season revisions. Operation Epic Fury in Iran has caused significant increases in input costs, most notably nitrogen, fertilizer, and fuel. For the average farm, I estimate these higher costs have added about $35 per acre to overall production costs as of March 31st. Farms using more fertilizer or fuel than the national average, due to higher yields, for example, will likely see cost increases higher than this. Farmers who bought all of their inputs before March 1st but sold none of their expected production could see operating margins that are about $40 per acre higher now than they were projected to be before the Iran conflict began, due to the increase in corn prices. For those in this situation, consider downside price protection to manage risk and help capture the higher margin level. The current margin indicator has changed little overall since the Iran conflict began. This suggests that corn futures prices have risen proportionally to the change in average per acre costs. The current margin indicator is the estimated operating margin of an average farm today if inputs were purchased now and average expected prices were received for expected production. Looking ahead, I expect corn futures prices to continue to be heavily influenced by the effects of the Iran conflict and their duration. A reasonably quick resolution to the Iran conflict in a few weeks' time likely limits the longer-term overall inflationary impact of energy prices on ag inputs, but does little to ease fertilizer prices for the 2026 crop. A more prolonged conflict could mean input prices remain elevated. Other downstream energy-related inputs, such as chemicals, eventually see higher prices at the farm gate, and the potential for fertilizer shortages to affect the supply prospects of subsequent crops, not just corn. For the duration of the Iran conflict, continue to monitor crop markets closely, as there could be favorable pricing opportunities amid the volatility.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Beef trimmings have continued to kind of defy the market.
University of Nebraska at Lincoln livestock economist Elliot Dennis.
The 90s that we continue to see are very, very strong. Prices continue to rise. Coal cow prices continue to rise as well, as we just continue to have a strong demand for trimmings. We think about kind of the effect of, you know, the border closure and what potentially lean trimmings look like. I mean, trimmings are a large portion of our imports each month. They make up about 50% of all the trimmings. So when we think about trimmings versus cuts, the big discussion that we've been having here in Nebraska has been more about, if we're importing trimmings, what does that ultimately do for our coal cow demand, as we tend to, you know, harvest cows in order to meet, you know, our 90s demand. So as we import more trimmings, potentially that softens the coal cow market a bit. But the larger conversation is more about, as the border continues to be closed and Mexico continues to increase their, you know, their federal inspection kill, what does that ultimately do for imports through USMCA, which has a 0% tariff? And really what we see through Mexico, what it's essentially increased is the total cuts that has been imported. So that would be cuts in primos, subprimos. And so they are importing more basically finished product to us rather than importing the feeder cattle. And some of that imports is having a softening effect on the cattle prices, primarily because those cuts are going directly to retail. And as retail kind of fills their demand with beef imports, that kind of softens the demand for domestic cattle production. As the border continues to be closed, those cattle that are down in Mexico need to be fed and harvested. They have corn to feed it. And if excess, you know, any corn deficit, they can import from us and from other countries. And so as long as that border continues to be closed, they will continue to feed those cattle. If and when the border is reopened, we know trade follows basically our comparative advantage, and that comparative advantage is showed in price. And so price differentials plus transportation, as long as there is a margin to be made, we will see those feeder cattle flow back into the United States to be fed and harvested here. Really the big point there is that some of that cattle that's being fed there is being harvested and being imported as box product to retailers in replacement of you know, domestic fat cattle. Tuesday, the USDA introduced their basically modified plan for New World Screwworm, which was really 8 steps on how to combat New World Screwworm. This is like, how do you effectively manage communication? How are we reducing spread? What are we doing, you know, when New World Screwworm potentially gets on an infected premise? And then all the way down of basically how to maintain continuity of business and information flow. The thing that we, you know, I've been really emphasizing, given Secretary Rollins' comments a few weeks ago about a potential border reopening, has really been on, you know, how do we reduce the spread from to non-affected animals and really to prevent New World Screwworm from establishing in new areas. And they came out with a new kind of buffer zone and how do we do stop movements when we actually observe an affected animal? How do we make sure that not only that we observe it, but we test it? And the worry is not necessarily about the animal's movement. It's more about the truck movements. And really, they're talking about a pretty wide fly surveillance zone, about 200 kilometers, and really an active animal and fly detection within about 20 kilometers. So, you know, somewhere in that 8 to 10 mile range. So the positive thing is that there is a plan and that it will be implemented in any case of if we have a border opening at any time in the future.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Our office, we specialize in probate and estate litigation and estate and probate administration as well, and trust and fiduciary litigation.
Corey Kruger is managing partner of Hensley and Kruger in Houston, Texas, but he grew up in a rural community.
Yes, sir. I grew up in Victoria, Texas. Then I went to the University of Texas in Austin, and then I went to law school here in Houston. I'm in Houston, Texas now. I went to law school at University of Houston.
He admits there's quite a few storms that Americans will have to navigate in the future, but maybe none bigger than the probate storm.
The probate storm generally is said to be what we're coming into is what is going to be America being in the middle of the largest intergenerational wealth transfer in history. Over $70 to $80 trillion with a T is expected to change hands in the next several decades. Combine that with more complex family structures, blended families, and quite frankly, inadequate planning, and you get to where we are right now, what they're calling the probate storm.
So you have a will or a living trust. You're okay. You don't have to worry about probate, right?
It's a great question, and there's a common misconception among the general public, and if I didn't do this for a living, I wouldn't know either. So you could have a will done by a lawyer, competent legal counsel. Someone passes away, you still have to go to court for the court to so-called bless it, to order it as an admitted will to probate so that it's a valid will. So the common misconception is, well, I got this will, so once something happens to me, no problem. Just it goes on to whoever it is or I say it is in my will. But that's not true. You got to go to probate court regardless if you have a will to go get it admitted to probate so the court says it's a good and valid will.
And having a plan today doesn't always mean that plan works down the road.
Oh, yeah. The problem is there's not a perfect answer necessarily unless every heir is on the same page, which is quite frankly very rare. You can put it in a trust and hope and want that these certain heirs, maybe it's your kids, maybe you have call it three kids and you want them all to own the property and trust. And well, that's great. But what if one of them is in a financial bind that they need, they want to get bought out, and maybe another one of your kids is doing great financially and has the resources and wants to keep it going. So it's going to create conflict. The best way to deal with this is to plan for it through estate planning and also communication with your children or your heirs so that everyone is at least trying to get on the same page. Now, even that though, situations and circumstances change down the line. Like I said, everyone could be fine and dandy when you sign these estate planning documents saying that it's going to go into trust. Well, things change. Something happens. Maybe someone in your family gets sick, it's a lot to think about. And quite frankly, it's a lot to deal with. The problem is that 65% of Americans don't even have a will. And so if you don't have any planning done, that just makes all these problems exponentially more difficult to deal with.
It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
This is Agriculture Today.
As the U.S. spring planting season begins, the USDA March 31st Prospective Planting Report indicated farmers intend to plant 84.7 million acres of soybeans, up nearly 3.2 million acres or 4% from 2025.
Bree Botts is a grain and oilseed analyst with Terrain.
The biggest regional change is for the Western Corn Belt, with Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, and North and South Dakota all increasing planted area in 2026 versus 2025. The Southeast also indicates a significant increase in soybean planted area for 2026, led by Arkansas and Mississippi planting less corn, rice, and cotton than in 2025. Importantly, the March survey response rate was the lowest ever at 37%, down 7% from last year. Over 80% of the survey responses were received after the Middle East conflict began. Although no one knows how long the conflict will last, Terrain doesn't expect a significant shift to soybeans, as many U.S. farmers had previously secured fertilizer needs. However, other countries may strongly consider the impact of rising input costs and choose to plant less fertilizer-intensive crops such as soybeans. If that's the case, global supplies and ending stocks will likely rise and continue to outpace global demand, pressuring U.S. new crop exports and prices. However, the 2026 soybean crop has a long way to go until harvest, so weather conditions during the planting and growing season will ultimately determine yields and supplies for the new crop balance sheet. Farmers should carefully weigh the risk of lower prices overall against weather-related rallies that may occur during the planting or growing season. Global demand for bulk soybeans continues to be volatile and questionable. It is becoming less likely that the U.S. will see additional old crop export sales to China near 8 million metric tons or nearly 300 million bushels as previously promoted by the U.S. administration. As of March 1st, the USDA's quarterly grain stocks report indicates 2.1 billion bushels have been stored in 2026, up 10% from last year. This reflects the softer demand thus far this crop year. Based on the actual export sales pace this crop year to date, I believe the USDA export sales forecast is still 100 million bushels too optimistic, and expect ending stocks to rise accordingly to 450 million bushels, despite China's purchasing total 12 million metric tons. Chinese President Xi Jinping and President Trump are expected to meet mid-May to discuss trade relations. Given China has yet to purchase any new crop soybeans for 2026-27, new crop export sales bookings to China during quarter two and quarter three will be critical. Anything less than the 25 million metric tons of U.S. soybean exports to China will lead to rising stocks, pressuring prices. China has also resumed canola purchases from Canada, which could limit its import needs of other oil seeds like soybeans. While Brazil is experiencing some logistical delays with its soybean harvest, it is still record large. Brazil remains the cheapest global supplier, and its supplies will eventually hit the global market, limiting U.S. bulk exports. Mother Nature will have the ultimate say in final new crop yields and supply, so carefully weighing any weather-related price rallies against fundamentals will be important for marketing decisions. On the demand side, closely watch actual old and new crop export sales activity from China, especially following the mid-May meeting between the U.S. and China. Unless China's purchases of U.S. soybeans exceeds the 25 million metric tons for new crop, prices will lean neutral. Domestic biofuel policy can stabilize prices, but it alone will not be supportive of prices sustaining beans in the teens levels for the long term. The good news is demand for processed soybeans, soy oil, and soy meal will accelerate in the latter half of the crop year, leading to favorable basis for farmers near crush plants.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Here in Nebraska, prices at the 5-6 weights and 7-8 weights have really kind of plateaued over the last, last week and really last month.
Elliot Dennis is a livestock economist at the University of Nebraska at Lincoln.
5-6 weights were still hanging around that $500 per 100 weight, and the 7-8s were still hanging around that $400 a 100 weight. So at least on the 7-8s weight, we should be seeing some seasonal increases in prices if we were just to follow just kind of normal seasonal trends. On the 5-6 weights, same thing. We should have been increasing by now, and so there is some softening at least on the cash side here in Nebraska. A little bit different than what we've been seeing on the CME futures this past week, which was really pretty bullish besides kind of the midweek trade. Midweek, we kind of plateaued there for a little bit, but then picked up to really kind of end out really on that November feeder cattle contract, you know, in that 365 range. So cash lagging a little bit relative to futures, and so basis narrowing just a bit. Fed cattle prices started out about 245 on the live FOB steers, and then we really finished it out really rising to about 247 on the national cash. Middle of the week was kind of mixed, and prices kind of continued to rise there on at least on the cash market. We're still seeing this south premium to north cattle, as we still have the border closure and really just tight cattle down there. Quality differences are still kind of favoring kind of northern feeders, as the packers that are killing cattle here just continue to grade extremely high percentages of choice and prime, as we've kind of seen extended days on feed and higher carcass weights. The live cattle contracts on the CME have also continued to rise. When we look at kind of deferred contracts, extreme strength. Bull market is just has just continued to rise. The October contract, very, very strong right now. And even when we think about the April contract that's going to be closing here in a couple weeks, has continued to be extremely strong with really no, when we think about live cattle deliveries, no live cattle deliveries have really been placed against it. So all-time high contract that we've ever seen, 251, really where we ended the week on the April contract, and just has continued to defy odds, even as we've seen some slight weakening in the boxed beef market. This week, we really saw boxed beef kind of struggle a little bit this week. Primarily, it was due to kind of the middle meats that really were trading. When we think about, you know, choice boxes were lower, the rib was lower, and overall, the kind of that choice select was really kind of favoring kind of that select premium. So that was a difficulty for, you know, for the box market, although we continue to have increased projected kill for on the packer side.
So what does that border reopening mean for producers here in the U.S.?
Yeah, if we think about kind of that border opening, some of those cattle that we're competing for is really kind of strengthening prices here. There is going to be some dampening effect on that as we think about feeder cattle demand, just because we don't need as many of them, and so that demand is just going to go down because we're going to be importing some of those from some of those feeder cattle from Mexico. So there will be a little bit of a price impact on feeder cattle, and ultimately, when I think about what that looks like for, you know, kill will obviously increase as for fat cattle along the supply chain. You know what that ultimately does for days on feed is to be seen, really, because you know, a lot of the days on feed and where we're at is a pretty big function of the price of corn right now relative to kind of cattle prices. So that's probably going to have a larger impact on the days on feed than at least the feeder cattle coming in.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.